I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome to Our House, the only complete on-air resource for your home ownership needs. Now, here's the host of Our House, Peter Hunt.
Good morning and welcome to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and this show is brought to you by the continuously improving HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and homeownership experience. HuntRealEstate.com is the only place on the web where you can find not only a complete inventory of homes available in any market we serve, but you'll also find access to a complete set of homeownership services at Our House. The show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage, NMLS number 37405. Hunt Mortgage is an equal opportunity lender. Call them today, 633-3700, that's 716, of course, and ask one of our very skilled mortgage consultants to work with you to find the lowest rate and closing costs for your particular home financing needs and wants, and that's always our guarantee. You can try huntmortgage.com also. That's a lot easier than even calling, so try that, and that everything is there. You can even apply for a mortgage online, which is a really tremendously convenient option in today's world. Also, ask about our many exclusive programs or look at our many exclusive programs online, including our unique pre-purchase commitment that allows you at no cost or risk to effectively enter the market to find your next home with cash. In today's still very competitive residential real estate market, where there is still a shortage of listings, when you do find the house you want to make sure that your offer is as strong as possible when there's still often more than one offer. And I say, keep saying still, because this keeps going on and on and on. So from a seller's perspective, cash is very persuasive. If you're working with a skilled Hunt sales professional armed with your pre-purchase commitment, your offer is the equivalent of cash, and don't let anybody tell you otherwise. And when you do find the house you want, let's say you're in a house right now and was right for you when you bought it years ago, but you've outgrown it, or maybe it's simply outgrown you. In any case, it no longer meets your lifestyle, but where are you going to go even if you were to sell at a great price? Well, Hunt Mortgage and Hunt Real Estate have combined to solve that problem through the Golden Gate, the bridge to your next home. We've combined a bridge loan and a guaranteed sale on your present house to get you out looking for that right house for you right now. To learn more about any of our unique programs, go to huntmortgage.com or call today 716-633-3700 for a personalized, customized service that will knock your socks off. Hunt is the official real estate and relocation provider of our hometown professional teams, the Buffalo Bills and the Buffalo Sabres, and we're also proud supporters of our Bisons and our Bandits, and we're delighted to have such great seasons going on right now. It's exciting to see all of our teams, and of course, tomorrow is the day. That's it. So go Bills. Cincinnati, look out. I think we're going to romp all over them. We have a very special show for you today, but our show is broadcast live on WBEN 930 AM and 98.5 HD3. That's FM. And you can listen live anywhere in the world on the Odyssey app or at WBEN.com. And for those of you who'd like to participate in today's show, if you have any questions or comments about what my guests will be speaking to or any aspect of real estate, call us in the studio at 716-803-0930. You can text us at that same number, 716-803-0930. We do have a special show for you today. Live in the studio with me today is Brian Posner. Brian is the geothermal specialist with NOCO. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning, Peter.
It's good to have you here.
Thank you.
So what exactly is a geothermal specialist?
What I do is I go and take a look at residential homes and show them what the conversion to geothermal energy would be like from their traditional combustion system.
So in today's world, I watched the advertising, and it seems like people are in a rush. The providers of gas furnaces are in a rush to get you to buy one because of all the noise and the state right now about not being able to do that sometime down the road. What exactly is the status of the legislation or the executive orders around the whole gas issue?
As of right now, the deadlines the CLCPA scoping plan have put out would be in 2027. New builds would not be able to incorporate combustion systems. Then 2030, you would no longer be able to purchase combustion systems, so for retrofits or replacing existing systems. And then their goal is by 2050 to have us fully electrified electric cars and about, I believe, 80% of homes in the area at a zero emission.
You know that the production of electricity is provided for the most part by the fuels that they want to ban. So how are they going to deal with all that?
Well, that's a good question. We're at a point where just about 50% of our electricity in New York State is coming from combustion, and that would be dual fuel and natural gas. The other 50% roughly comes from hydro, nuclear, wind, and then a combination of the other renewables, and then a small sliver of other fossil fuels. As of right now, we certainly can take it any way we want to go, but the timing is going to be very important.
Well, speak to that. What does that mean?
What that means is if we're going to be moving to an area where we're getting most of our electricity from renewables, we're going to need to be talking about where we can put more renewable sources to be locally produced in New York.
Meaning spaces for windmills?
Potentially. There are some really cool new technologies that we've all seen coming out in just the last couple of years. I guess that's the exponential curve in technology as things get crazier and crazier, even quicker. Mm-hmm. They actually have windmills now that are like a gyroscope. So instead of big blades on the windmill, it's more like an inverted cone that just rotates on a small axis instead of the big windmill turbine spinning around.
Yeah, I find them pretty ugly. We drove out west a few years ago just prior to the whole COVID thing setting in. And we went through South Dakota all the way through the northern route out to Arizona eventually. And it was amazing how much of the landscape is covered with these things now. And it was kind of scary, ugly in my opinion. Is it just that perhaps that land couldn't be reasonably used for anything else? I mean, it seems to me it was pasture land, and now it's just covered with windmills.
I mean, there are a whole bunch of things people could do with it. They could buy it, hopefully, at a discounted price and do more farming. Lord knows we need more agriculture in this state. They could cover it in solar. They could put in more windmills. As population increases, population density in areas like Western New York go up, we do tend to take over land that normally was untouched and build on it, whether it's for some type of residential housing, commercial use, agriculture, energy generation. So I'm personally someone who really enjoys the outdoors and enjoys nature, but this is sort of the gift and the curse of our civilization. As our population grows, we need to use more of the land for more purposes, and clearly energy generation is becoming more and more prevalent.
You know, it's interesting. If you look at the real net growth in population in upstate New York, it's not significant. And because of that, there's been criticism over the years that pushing farther and farther out into the rural communities to expand residential development is kind of a zero-sum game. We lose people in a city, let's say, but we grow people in the suburbs or in beyond that into the other rural communities. I can see the kind of push you're talking about in Florida, let's say, where there's net population growth, where we're in New York State, we're experiencing a bit of a net population drain. So just by expanding out, just like you're saying, there's a lot of people who just enjoy nature, and by just taking it over with the next subdivision, maybe responding to a need that people feel that they just want to build a new house. But at the same time, we often deplete or the properties that are left behind often are just that, they're left behind, or they become destroyed. And we have, for example, in the city of Buffalo, many vacant lots where homes have been removed. So if I don't mean to get too far afield on this, but the fact of life is what you're saying in terms of, well, I should say what has been said in terms of this whole push for kind of a green culture, a lot of it was dependent upon overpopulation or growth in population, and how, that we're taxing the natural resources. We don't really have that problem here, though, in New York State, do we?
Not necessarily. We do take really good advantage of what we have, and I do believe that we are nation leaders in a lot of aspects. But like you said yourself, in specifically New York State, we are seeing a little bit of a population drain. I think we all know a few people who've chose to get up and move to Florida specifically.
Sure. Right.
The taxes in the state are not ideal, and a lot of the legislation is it's almost an experiment. We always want to be a nation leader in our legislation, but I think there's a difference between being a nation leader with a tried and true policy that makes sense and the research is done, and policies that are idealistic.
And so won't all this discussion of these terminal dates, 2027, 2030, and 2050, won't it even make us less attractive for, I mean, you're a young man. I don't know if you have family or not, that's none of my business, but the fact of life is that if you were to raise a family, where would you want to do that? Would you want to do that in a place that at least is perceived as being more environmentally friendly, or do you want to raise your kids in a place where the opportunities for them from a educational other standpoint are greater, and perhaps we don't have the burden of regulation and taxation that a lot of people say we have here?
My answer to your question is twofold. The first and most important answer, just from my personal opinion of where I'd want to raise my family, would be here, and that's because I have family here. Buffalo's always treated me well, and I've lived in quite a few places at this point in my life, and I have not seen what we have in Buffalo in a lot of the other states I've lived in. Our community is fantastic. Our education is really good. We get a true four seasons. There are a lot of reasons why I love Buffalo, and I'll certainly raise my family here. But then answering specifically to your point, I do think there are other areas in the country where I could be more rewarded for my labor and have less taken from me for taxes, live in places where I would have more constitutional freedom, with states that choose to not put in as many legislative moves as New York does. So it is a balance, but I think overall the community and family I have in Buffalo are most certainly going to keep me here. That's a no-brainer. But I do wish that we were a little bit more like some of the other states.
One of the things that I heard this week, I went to a lecture from, it was actually more of a discussion than a lecture, between two prominent citizens in Western New York. And one of the people speaking said that there has been a study done that Western New York could be among the most youth-friendly places in the country within 10 years. And I'm quoting that a little wrong, but that was the context of it. And of course, the question is, why? How could that be? Well, one of the things that they cited was, number one, Four Seasons. That Four Seasons is an extremely attractive thing that people tend to downplay when it's cold outside and gray like it is today. They say, well, gee, couldn't I be in Florida? Well, you could, but it's a different world down there. But it's really not four seasons there, let's face a fact. I mean, they call it four seasons. There's a spring, but it looks a lot different than our spring. So, and the other main factor to your what you do in terms of being a specialist in heat and cooling resources is water. So to what extent does our location impact geothermal, for example? How deep do you have to go to hit groundwater that you have to and heat with? And describe the process a little bit. How do you dig a well, and what happens when you extract that well?
Absolutely. So there's one important distinction I want to get off right off the bat, which is the difference between geothermal energy and geothermal heating and cooling. Geothermal energy production is a process of going thousands of feet into the earth to get to extreme temperatures that you can then create steam from to turn a turbine or a whole bunch of other mechanisms, and that creates energy. What I do, geothermal heating and cooling, is actually just using the near constant 55 degree temperature in the ground that exists from about 3 or 4 feet below grade all the way down to about where we go, about 500 feet below grade. So that's a big important distinction. A lot of people seem to confuse geothermal energy production with geothermal heating and cooling. They are not the same. Actually, technically, geothermal heating and cooling is not using the true heat of the earth from the earth's core. We don't go that deep. What we're using is the stored solar energy in the earth's crust that provides that constant 55 degree temperature. Now, the actual process is putting a loop field in the ground. This can be done so either horizontally with trenches about 8 feet deep, 4 feet wide, and anywhere from 80 to over 100 feet long, depending on what type of trenches you need and how much piping you need to go into the ground for your heat pump or heat pumps plural. The other way to do it is putting the loop in vertically, where we take a drill rig, we drill up to 499 feet deep, we case the hole in steel casings down to bedrock, fill it with thermally conductive grout and the piping itself. This is a closed loop system, so we're not putting the pipes into, you know, some type of water underground and sucking that water up. It's a closed loop, so where we put the loop in at the very bottom, there's a U and it comes right back up, actually. What circulates inside that loop is either a water glycol or a water methanol mixture. And what that does, it transfers heat from the liquid into the ground and vice versa, so it comes back out at 55 degrees. This is an important difference from electric air source heat pumps, because when you're using the air as a heat sink, you have to deal with your seasonality. When you're using the constant temperature in the ground, you have something constant. So for example, an air source electric heat pump is trying to pull heat from the outside air and push it into your home. Well, it requires a lot of electricity to pull heat from the 5 to 20 degree air. It requires a lot less electricity to pull heat from the 55 degree ground. And then likewise, in the summertime, your heat pump is trying to take heat from the home and push it outside the home. That's how we get air conditioning, cold air. It's not specifically making the air cold. It's removing heat from your home and pushing it outside. Well, when the summer air is 80 to 90 degrees, it requires a decent amount of energy to push more heat into that. It requires a lot less to push heat into the 55 degree ground. So it's a little bit ironic almost that with air source heat pumps, the time when you need it to be the most efficient and provide you serious heating and cooling is when it's the least efficient due to the heat sink nature of the air. The technology is very similar. Refrigerant inside the system being expanded or pressurized to gain or lose energy and therefore heat. But the big difference is that heat sink. Using the ground is a lot better than using the outside air.
And there's a question of cost, though.
Absolutely.
And what you're saying is that you can't purchase by 2030. You're not going to be able to purchase a gas-fired furnace, for example.
Theoretically,
Is this legislation passed? There's a question from a text that says, "Is this actually a proposal or is it actual legislation?"
It would be more along the lines of a proposal. Right now, it's detailed in the CLCPA scoping plan, which at the moment is a plan. However, I believe in December it was voted on 19-3 to pass. I do not know if it's what process it's sitting in right now, but as I understand it, I don't believe it's formally signed into law yet.
Close. What are those letters and what do they stand for again?
The Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act.
So this is a proposed legislation then that we're waiting to actually have the legislature and the Senate pass. Is that correct?
I'm not sure exactly where it sits in the legislative process. Mm-hmm. My personal opinion on it is that it's going to get pushed back. I firmly believe that we are a country of the people and for the people. And when the people vehemently disagree with something, the state and the federal government, whoever the governing body is, needs to take that into account. We've all seen the pushback on this legislation and these proposed ideas so far. I certainly think it could potentially be doable, but that's not what it's about. It's about, do people have the finances to make it happen? Because as much as the state wants to throw our taxpayer dollars at it, which is very nice of them to decide to do, sure, we need to be the ones making the decision. And if people are as opposed in majority to this as it seems they are so far, I think the state needs to take that into account.
Well, I couldn't agree more. And I haven't talked to anybody who says this is a great idea. I mean, and people bring it up to me all the time, but nobody seems to know exactly where it stands. And what the one person who texted said that there's been a lot of conversation on the radio this week across the whole country, really, and pointing at New York, by the way, where it seems to be in the proposal stage, like you describe. So, what happens next? You said was a 19-3 vote. What happens then? Is it then pushed back to the legislature, or don't you know?
I'm not sure. I had a great government teacher in high school, and I'm sure if she was listening to this right now, she would be tearing her hair out. But I'm not exactly sure where it goes from here.
Okay, great. Well, let's go back to the geothermal systems that you work with. Why would somebody pick one of those as opposed to a traditional gas-fired furnace today? Now, well, they still can, I should say.
The reason people choose to pick it today, there are a lot of different reasons, the biggest of which is probably cost. As I'm sure you know, the cost of heating oil and propane have been going up significantly. Right now, people who are paying—
Cost of operation.
The cost of the heating oil or the propane itself.
So that's the cost of operation of the system.
Yes, yes.
So, but the cost of the system itself.
Oh, well, so, I mean, you need to consider one with the other. They can't be isolated. You know, it's all fine and dandy to say, oh, it only costs me anywhere from $500 to $2,000 to put in a new furnace for, you know, just the cost of the furnace, not including labor. But you have to consider, what's it going to cost you per year to run it? If you're a customer that, let's say, has a heating oil boiler, yeah, you could buy a new boiler for relatively inexpensive price. But if you're going to spend $2,000 to $6,000 a year to run it, which is what some people in 1,000 to 2,500 square foot houses in the rural areas around here are currently spending.
Is that propane?
Heating oil.
Heating oil, okay.
If they're spending that much on it in a year, well, now all of a sudden they could actually install geothermal and run it for less. And that includes the financing price of financing the system and running it. That cost can be less than their actual cost of heating oil or propane at the moment. And if it is, that's why a lot of people are switching. They go, look, I want to increase the value of my home. I want to take advantage of the federal and state incentives to put this in, which right now pay for around 50% of the system. And they've got some foresight. So that's why they want to put it in now. They want to take advantage of the carrot before the stick. I think it's safe to assume that once this is firmly in law, the incentives are not going to be as strong, if they're there at all.
Well, I'd have to believe that. You do require electricity to operate your system, though, correct?
Correct.
So how does that work? Is it running the pumps?
Yeah, it's running the circulation pumps that keep the liquid mix running through the heat pump, then out through the loop field and back. And it also runs all the internal components. It is a heavily electrified system. It's a fully electric heat pump, 100%.
So when you factor into the costs of operation, are there other costs besides electricity once the system is installed?
No, that's one of the beautiful things about geothermal is the maintenance is essentially replacing an air filter and monitoring it.
We do have to go to break. We'll be right back with more with Brian Posner from NOCO after these very important messages.
Buying a home can be challenging, especially if you need to sell your current house first. Hunt Mortgage and Hunt Real Estate are here to help with the Golden Gate, the bridge to your next home. This innovative program features a bridge loan from Hunt Mortgage along with a guaranteed sale of your current home when you partner with a Hunt Real Estate sales professional. Visit huntmortgage.com/Golden Gate for more details. The Golden Gate from Hunt Mortgage and Hunt Real Estate. Your equity when you want it, your home sold guaranteed. Terms and conditions apply. Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, NMLS 37405, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome back to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the continuously improving HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. HuntRealEstate.com is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA here in Buffalo, Niagara, and all across upstate New York, and also through our links to Boston, Massachusetts, and Phoenix, Arizona. We are live in the studio this morning with Brian Posner, who is the geothermal specialist with NOCO. We've been discussing, among other things, various ways. I mean, really what we're talking about is various ways to provide a comfortable home. And that really is now, historically, there's been, Brian, there's been steam systems, hot water systems, forced air systems. And now your system is essentially a forced air system. Is that correct? Or is it describe what happens in the living quarters.
Absolutely. So geothermal can be set up either as a hydronic system or a forced air. So it can work through radiant floor, baseboard heaters, potentially even traditional radiators if they're large enough for the surface area of the room they're trying to heat. It can also work through forced air.
As I mentioned earlier to you before the show, I live in a home with a geothermal system. I'm not sure how it works, to tell you the truth, but I'm learning today, which is a good thing. But we have radiators, and we also have a forced air system as well. I'm assuming the forced air system is primarily to fill the gap when it's really cold, to heat the rest of the house, to keep it up to the right temperature. And also in the summer to cool it. Is that functionally how these things work? Because you would have to have some forced air system to have air conditioning, correct?
Correct. So your hydronic system cannot do air conditioning. It can only do heating. So that is a big benefit of forced air, being able to have air conditioning. Additionally, with forced air, it's more efficient in terms of how much energy you're getting for the electricity you put in, the amount of heat you get out of that. It does become a little bit more efficient with a forced air system.
That's very interesting. So one of the things that we keep hearing about right along the lake is, and there's a lot of controversy, not just about natural gas thing, but also about windmills. I don't know what you know about what's going on with the lake. During the break, this may be news to you, but there's proposals out there to put windmills in the lake. And this is something that they're doing offshore around the world. So do you know anything about that?
I do not know very much about that. My personal opinion would be if there was somewhere else to put them, that would be ideal because the natural splendor of the lakes we have in this region is really beautiful. Just this week, I was up on houses on the shore of Lake Ontario and Lake Erie looking at some prospective customers' houses for heat pumps and just looking out their kitchen window. Or their living room window, it's absolutely gorgeous. It makes me want to go get a place on the lake someday. Sure. I don't think I would enjoy that view as much if there were windmills lining it, but who knows? Potentially that's because it's the most efficient by leaps and bounds for the wind paths in this region. Maybe that's the only place they can put them and get as significant of a draw of electricity from them that they can. That's what would make sense to me if that was their reasoning. But if that's not their reasoning, if it's because that it costs less money to do so, if they could put them somewhere else, I would definitely prefer that.
You know, one of the things that strikes me about the windmills and even solar is the difficulty in storing.
The storage is huge.
So what do you do about that? What's the future of that whole world? Because if the windmill's there, you've got to use that energy pretty quickly.
So the conversation we're getting into is the net metering agreement with our power authority. Right now, let's say a residential customer who has solar panels on their roof. They are most likely not storing the energy that comes from the solar panels. What's most likely happening is they have an agreement called the net metering agreement that their solar provider set up, where the energy they produce that their home doesn't use immediately goes back into the grid and gets stored. The grid stores it for us or uses it elsewhere and then gives you a, sort of like an energy credit, like rollover minutes from a cell phone. Whatever you didn't use, you can use for free in the future. So let's say in a month, somebody put an extra 1,000 kilowatt hours into the grid that they didn't use. And the grid dispersed those kilowatt hours from the solar system elsewhere. Well, now the next 1,000 kilowatt hours they pull from the grid, they will pull for free. That's essentially the net metering agreement. The energy you put in now, you can draw on later because you put it into the grid instead of storing it at your own house. That's what makes solar viable in our area right now. Because if people didn't have that and they had to store the energy, they wouldn't be able to. The batteries that cost quite a few thousands can power your home for about 1 to 2 days if fully stocked with energy from your solar system. Trying to store a week or a month worth of energy for an average-sized home would require a massive investment in batteries. So that is, we're an innovative country in a capitalist society. It opens opportunity for newer, better batteries to be developed, which is what I believe a lot of different companies are working on now. But as it exists right now, no, there's absolutely no way that it's viable for people to store their own power on hand.
It's interesting. So it's really impossible to get off the grid.
I wouldn't say that. I've seen quite a few homes that are essentially fully off the grid. They have a water pump. They have a water well with a pump. They have a solar system. They have a geothermal system or a highly efficient electric system. And they are truly off the grid if they desire to be with quite a few batteries. But the batteries are the limiting factor there. Not everybody can have access to that many batteries. I would agree with you that it's impossible for everybody to get off the grid fully at this moment, but it can certainly be done. I've seen it done quite a few times.
You know, it's interesting. You mentioned earlier about windmills, which about the new type of windmill. I actually met with an engineer who has designed a turbine, and it's incredible. He says his turbine is 96 or 94% efficient. Where a windmill, what our vision might be of a windmill right now, is only 4% efficient because most of the air is going right through it. Do you know anything about that?
I do not, but it does feed into the whole conversation that we were just having. I'm hoping that someone's going to step up and make the developments we need. So it sounds like this guy is on that right track.
Well, it's pretty amazing, actually, what I saw. These are not small. The reason why I met with him was to see if there was a residential application because I own property on the lake and I was just like you say, this is the way the wind patterns are in this community. It's enormous power that's coming at you that if you could harness in some way without an eyesore of a windmill, in my opinion anyway, and from the text that we're getting, many people share that these are eyesores.
Can I read the one at the bottom
yeah,
there?
Yeah,
windmills please. In the lake will generate hacksaws in my hand.
That's interesting.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So there's people. We do have a caller online. Let's take this call. This is Mike from Wheatfield. Mike, how can we help you?
Yeah. Good morning. Now, I've heard that one of the deadlines of 2027, there has to be, for a house to be sold, there has to be home energy seal of approval. Now, how much would that cost? And does this mean that unless your house is 100% electric, you cannot sell a house? Is that trying to force people to go electric?
You know,
anything about that?
I guess I'm not too sure what the consequences would be if I still maintained a gas furnace in 2028 or if I build a house in 2028 with a gas furnace, if they'd, you know, come and arrest me or something. I don't know. Let's say I bought 25 gas furnaces in 2026 to build over the next couple of years, and I didn't sell all the houses by the end of 2027. I wonder what they would do. I guess that's a pretty interesting question here. We're also being told that this is a propaganda show. So if the power lines go down, you're going to freeze, right? If there's a major storm and there's no electricity, does it matter if you have solar panels? So what do you think about that?
Well, if the power lines go down and you don't have a generator, you're going to freeze regardless. Your furnace, even if it's combustion, requires electricity to function. It's not going to work if you don't have electricity. So you know what? If power lines go down for an extended period of time, you're right. People are going to freeze, but they're going to freeze with the systems they have right now. Unless they have a wood-burning stove, they won't have heat if they have no power, unless they have a generator or some way to burn wood.
That's true. I mean, I just went through that myself. My electricity went out on the lake and pipes burst. So that was not exactly pleasant.
That does not sound like a good time.
No, it's a pretty ugly time. Somebody writes, is the lake big enough to keep windmills out of sight? Well, I suppose, but depends on where you are in the lake. And the other element about windmills has always been the impact on animal life. Do you know anything about that?
I do understand that it's quite detrimental to some of the migratory patterns for some of the birds in the area.
Yes. So do they factor that in when they make a plan? And how do they avoid the law of unintended consequences?
You know, I really, really wish that I was in the room when they're making some of these laws, because I'm legitimately curious. I want to know what they take into consideration. My hope would be there is someone sitting at the table saying, here's where birds tend to migrate to or from. This is an area we should steer clear of and not put windmills up because we don't want to harm those birds. But I don't know if there's someone like that in the room. Like we were talking about a little earlier, too, with the CLCPA scoping, I'm wondering, did they have professionals from the grid involved in that conversation saying, this is the amount of time it would take us to put up more capacity in the grid, more power lines, bigger ones? I don't know exactly what the process is, but as I understand it, to have what we would need by 2050 to be fully electrified, we would need about three times the amount of delivery in the grid. Again, don't know if that means more power lines, bigger ones, more efficient ones, but either way, I'm wondering, did they have someone from the grid in the room saying, this is how long it will realistically take us to do this, and did they set the guidelines for after that, before that? That should certainly be taken into consideration, but again, I'm not in the room when they make these decisions or these scoping plans.
I'd certainly like to think that right? There's been the kind of thought process that you're describing there, but who knows? And it's... I want to go back to one statistic quickly that you mentioned earlier, that 50% of our energy in this community, is it the state, the whole state?
Yeah, so I actually printed this out yesterday from NYISO, that circle graph right there. Mm-hmm. That was as of yesterday afternoon, exactly where the power in New York State is coming from.
And because you can't see this if you're at home, or driving in a car, let me just tell you what it says. Is hydro is 21.8% of our power. Wind is 5%. Other renewables are 1.47%. So you're looking at hydro, wind, and other renewables at approximately less than 30%. Then you've got dual fuel. What is dual fuel?
Dual fuel is a mix of natural gas and whatever else they can burn. I'm not even sure what some of those inputs are, but if you go to nyiso.com, you can actually look at this graph yourself, and if you hold your cursor over that segment of the graph, it'll tell you...
The combinations?
Correct.
Okay, good. Dual fuel, 26.77%, natural gas, 24.12%, and nuclear, 20.79%. I bet people don't know that we produce that much nuclear.
It is a surprising metric.
We'll be right back with more from our house viewers after these very important messages.
Buying a home can be challenging, especially if you need to sell your current house first. Hunt Mortgage and Hunt Real Estate are here to help with the Golden Gate, the bridge to your next home. This innovative program features a bridge loan from Hunt Mortgage along with a guaranteed sale of your current home when you partner with a Hunt Real Estate sales professional. Visit huntmortgage.com/Golden Gate for more details. The Golden Gate from Hunt Mortgage and Hunt Real Estate. Your equity when you want it, your home sold guaranteed. Terms and conditions apply. Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, NMLS 37405, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome back to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and this show is brought to you by the continuously improving huntrealestate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and homeownership experience. And the show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage, huntmortgage.com, where We have a complete array of services for you there, which, by the way, one of the things that we can provide for you, every single day we publish our rates, and you can contact any mortgage consultant of our many that we have in our community at 716-633-3700 and ask them about not only our interest rates for that day, which are coming down, by the way, and they've been coming down rather consistently since about November, or any of the programs that we offer, including our Second Look program. You know, if you watch television at all, if you're inundated with all kinds, or turn your computer on, your phone, there's all kinds of offerings for mortgage programs that really are designed mostly to refinance your current home. But how are you going to know if you're going to get the very best deal? Well, let us take that second look through Hunt Mortgage's Second Look program. There's no cost or risk, and we're so convinced that this will help you that you're going to receive a gift certificate just for allowing us to take that second look at whatever you received from any other lender, whether it's purchase money mortgage or refi, whatever your program is. So call them today, 716-633-3700, or go to huntmortgage.com. I'm live in the studio today with Brian Posner, who is the geothermal specialist with NOCO, and we're having kind of a wide-ranging and from my perspective, really kind of interesting discussion, very interesting discussion about energy usage, heat and cooling provided in your home, and the various opportunities that exist out there in the future. But right before the break, we were talking about the issue of nuclear power. Now, this is like, you know, they refer to nuclear power, you know, like they're all going to become glowing or something, that there's some kind of problem out there. But it really is a terribly efficient producer of energy, is it not?
It is indeed. And what surprises a lot of people is the fact that 20-some percent of our power in New York State comes from nuclear. And in addition to that, it's actually emission-free.
So don't we have a isn't there a ban on building any more nuclear plants in the state?
I'm not fully up to date on where we sit with that, but I'm certainly of the opinion that we could use a couple more.
It's interesting. Now, they also are talking about very small nuclear generators, like the ones that are on submarines, that they could be actually a local community could put one in and it could power their whole community and almost indefinitely. Have you heard about that?
I have not, but that would be fantastic.
And somebody wrote in when I was talking about a private, a home windmills kind of setup, that there's actually wind generators on sailboats. I wasn't aware of that. But I'm going to look into that. I think that's a very interesting discussion here.
There's an interesting comment that just came in, too. Windmill placement destroys long-established fish habitat and stirs up sediment that will be harmful to freshwater intakes. There's more writing after that, but it gets kind of cut off. I guess that's another environmental concern that comes in with trying to put windmills up along the lakeshore.
Well, what the texture is saying is that the windmill itself has to be anchored very deep into the ground in the base of the lake. So I that would make a lot of sense. I mean, if the winds are that strong and it wasn't anchored very deep, they would just blow over.
Yeah, that's not what we want to see with a big investment of taxpayer money.
So somebody says they're not windmills, they're wind turbines.
That'd probably be correct. I guess windmills are the old term for when the wind spinning that would actually grind up wheat into flour. So I guess they're not windmills.
That's true. It's something you might see in Holland or something like that. But anyways, we've got about 10 minutes left in the show, and I just would like you to kind of fast forward and draw a picture for our listeners of what the energy world might look like. I'm forgetting legislation for a second. Let's assume what kind of percentage of our households in this community could or should have geothermal equipment by when? I mean, I'm just trying to get a picture of how what are going to be people's options realistically as we go down the road.
So I can't speak to when it should be in place, but I'm of the opinion that everybody should have geothermal because of how phenomenally efficient it is. It actually reduces the strain on the grid for certain homes. So, for example, if they have a big air conditioner, central air, a lot of times the amount of kilowatt hours of electricity that your air conditioner uses to cool your home in the summertime, that can be the amount of energy or less that a geothermal system needs to do your heating and cooling throughout the entire year. It's a phenomenally efficient system. The question is just, what are people spending right now? and does it make sense for them to install it or not? Because I can almost guarantee that regardless of what they're spending on heating and cooling, geothermal could do it for less. But we have to talk about the cost of installation. It is a very high cost, and this is why there are state and federal incentives to get it installed. They cover around half the cost, which makes it much more affordable. So that is a deadline I can give for you. Right now, the biggest incentive is the 30% federal tax credit. Pays for 30% of the system after the clean heat rebate. And that ends up being a very significant amount of money. That's in place until about 2032. So that's a date I would feel comfortable saying, you know, in the next 10 years, people do have options to get geothermal installed for actually a pretty affordable price. Where it goes from there, I do not know. It'll certainly be less expensive to install air source heat pumps, but then people will spend 3 to 5 times as much running them. I think we'll be at a place where electric heat pumps will take over all the major cooling and heating needs. It makes sense where we're going. They're emission-free, so if we're going to try and be a zero-emission community and state, that's what we would need to do is electric heat pumps. But it really comes down to, will the technology get better and better and therefore start dropping in price a little bit as more companies pick it up, start doing it, cost of competition drives it down. That's typically what we see happen. And then as far as energy generation, how creative are people going to be? Are we going to see these new and improved wind turbines? Are we going to see nuclear plants, whether small or large, community size or state size? Are we going to see innovations there and see those coming back up more often? Wind, solar, nuclear, I mean, these are all things that the door is open right now for innovation and people to come in and wow the rest of the world.
You know, it's interesting. Just going back to the system itself, the water, the ground temperature is 55 degrees. Is that what you mentioned earlier?
Yes.
How do you get it up to, say, 70 to heat a 2,000 square foot house?
The same process as a normal electric heat pump. There's refrigerant running inside the system that gets either expanded or compressed, which either releases or gains a large amount of energy, and energy is heat.
Say that again. I'm just trying to understand.
So are you familiar with how a normal, let's say, air conditioner works?
I'm not very familiar with any of that stuff, but just describe. So the ground is 55 degrees. It's got to be raised or low. The temperature has to be raised.
For heating, yes. So what happens is the liquid that's circulating inside the loop field of a geothermal system, when it leaves the home, it goes through the earth, and throughout that traveling in the earth, it matches the 55-degree temperature in the ground, either putting energy into it or drawing energy out of it, depending on if the output is hotter or colder than the earth. But regardless, when it comes back into the home, it's at 55 degrees. Then the heat pump itself either increases or decreases that temperature depending on if you need heating or cooling. The process of actually raising or lowering that temperature has to do with a refrigerant running in the system, and that refrigerant is either compressed or it's expanded, which in turn either gains or loses a whole lot of energy and therefore heat.
Interesting. There's we've got a bunch of texts flying in here. Somebody says, "What about digging up your lawn to put the wells in?"
So it looks like they're asking about the cost to dig up your lawn to repair these coils. The beautiful thing about these coils of piping is you don't need to dig up your lawn for 200 to 600 years. Some geothermal providers say it's 600 years the loop is good for. Some say 100, some say 200. But either way, for somewhere in the three-digit amount of years, you won't need to dig these back up. This is high-density polyethylene piping that, if installed correctly, should not be against anything abrasive. Like shale or hard rocks, if your geothermal provider is doing what they should, when they do the excavation, they're either removing large rocks or shale, or they're putting in a bed of soft soil above and below the loop. So when it expands and contracts throughout the year, it's not rubbing up against something sharp and abrasive that can cut into it. Provided it's installed correctly, the loop should last hundreds of years, and it's only the heat pump you need to replace. place. Whoever is going to dig up the lawn and replace the loop, it probably makes more sense for them just to put a new loop in instead of digging up and replacing it in 100, 200, or maybe, as some have said, 600 years. But that's a problem for them.
There's a question also about the fact that we're buying hydropower from Canada. Do you know anything about that?
I do not, but I wouldn't be surprised.
One of your colleagues was talking about that here on the show a few weeks ago, and I'll look into that and report back to our listeners in the days ahead. I do want to mention one thing that in our industry we work with attorneys all the time, and there are many attorneys that are really experts in real estate, and one of those very fine experts, unfortunately, passed away this past weekend, and he was a very good friend of our company's and our whole industry. It was Jim Vallone, and we miss him already, and it's a sad day in our industry when we lose an expert of that quality, and certainly a very fine man. He was always a very pleasant guy. He's been on the show several times, and it's just it's a sad day that we're all experiencing with the loss of Mr. Vallone. Anyway, I want to pass on my sympathies to his family and all of those that of us that worked with him along the way. We've got a couple minutes left on the show here today, Brian, and I guess, again, I asked you to fast forward and look toward the future, and I guess I'm just trying to picture, if I'm a builder, for example, are you working with builders today? Are we putting a lot of geothermal systems in new houses today, or are we still using very conventional systems?
We are. We'd like it to be more, but we're certainly starting to make relationships with builders. It's a lot better to install geothermal with a new build than a retrofit, because you can do things like hiding the supply and return pipes inside the footer before the foundation is poured, so you don't have pipes pinned up against the wall or the roof running to the heat pump. You won't see them at all if you put it in with a new build. You can also have your builder, whoever's installing your ductwork, check out the static pressure requirements, whatever would make the most efficient allocation of ducts in the home for where the air is traveling to. That can also play a hand in how efficiently your home is heated or cooled. So there are a lot of reasons to involve a builder.
How long does it take to put a system in an existing house?
Typically anywhere from 4 days to 8 days.
Really?
It's usually around a week, 1 or 2 days doing the loop field, and then anywhere from 2 to 4 days inside the home installing the heat pump.
So Brian Posner, geothermal specialist with NOCO. How would someone reach you to learn more?
If someone wants to learn more, they can email me at B as in boy, and then my last name, P-O-S-N-E-R at NOCO.com. That's B Posner at NOCO.com. Or they can just call my cell phone, 716-866-1597. Finally, we are having a geothermal seminar for homeowners, builders, anybody that likes to come, February 9th. At Niagara University. If you'd like to come, it is free of charge. We do have drinks, food, we'll have small refreshments for you, and come have a conversation with us about geothermal and learn a little bit more. Again, that's going to be February 9th at Niagara University.
Brian Posner, geothermal specialist with NOCO, thanks very much for being with us today.
Peter, thanks for having me.
I'd like to thank our listeners. This is Peter Hunt. We'll be back on next week at the same time. And remember, when it comes to real estate, all of upstate is Hunt Country.
WBEN Buffalo, WKSE 3 HD3 Niagara Falls.
Always live on the free Odyssey app.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.